This is part two.
Enjoy.
Goodbye. We're gonna need a big show. We're gonna need a
big show with Mike, Cam, and guests. And we're back.
Cameron's drinking beers. Dub beers.
I'm gonna beat you later.
PBR. Beating folk. So, let's talk movies.
What do you want to do? Best of or worst of?
Well, I want to start with a couple of best of, but we're okay. We're gonna save our best and worst films for the end. Okay. Right now, I want to talk about favorite or best musical moment, and I dropped my pen. Thank you, Spencer. Best musical moment in a film this year. I'm gonna go with Robert. Your favorite, because I think you might have touched on it earlier.
Well, I kind of got two. To me, Man of Steel, everything, the music heightened everything in that movie. So that was that. But the best musical moment is probably Let It Go in Frozen. That was, to me, the movie was just kind of, you know, doing its thing for a while. But when that moment hit, that was such a powerhouse song and performance. And right. All the visuals were taking charge. Such a great moment. And to me, that's the best musical moment of the year.
Spencer, you also saw it, right?
I did, yeah. I don't know why I had such low hopes for that. Right. I don't know what's wrong with me, but it was so good.
Because it was very Disney poorly made.
Yeah, I guess that was the thing. Like,
it looked like another Planes type movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, just really geared at toddlers or whatever.
You know, it's like another one of those, like, Idina Menzel, like, you're still awesome moments. And, like, the only thing that I wished was that they would have come back around for a reprise of Do You Want to Build a Snowman?
Yeah.
Like at the end, that would have been cool.
That's actually been floating around the internet.
Really?
People have been saying that, yeah.
A lot of people have been saying, I didn't know that was like an internet thing. That's,
yeah.
That's totally true, though.
Right.
Like, that's a beautiful song.
I haven't seen it yet, but the positive things that everybody's been saying, I really want to.
It's fun.
Right on.
Yeah, Disney needs to reorganize their marketing.
Yeah.
Their marketing has sucked for so long.
That seems like a big complaint, especially with this movie. Ethan, you got an answer for this one?
I do, and I'm going to say one that you're going to say, so I'll say it second.
Okay.
My number one musical moment probably is the, let's just call it the piano scene in Stoker.
The duet.
Yeah.
Piano duet.
Yeah.
It's pretty much just...
Perfect.
It's one of those things where, is this really happening? Is this just a fantasy? Do we really know? Does it really matter? And you're just, it sucks you in, and it glues your eyeballs to the TV screen.
Is this the one you're talking about right here? Wait.
It is.
Okay. Because that's my only one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's awesome. You got one?
Do you want me to start talking about Pacific Rim now?
You might as well. All right, here's a disclaimer, ladies and gentlemen. Cameron, bless his heart, he's got a lot of love for Pacific Rim this year. And I mean,
not a lot for anything else.
Pacific Rim.
Which I can't explain really, but it's just how it went down.
My favorite porno parody this year, Pacific Rim Job. Yes. But yeah, go ahead.
I mean, here's a question. Did Lincoln come out this year?
No.
Okay. See, everything that I really liked that was like a drama or whatever came out last year. Yeah. Or like an, any other kind of action.
Why don't you open up your damn eyes and see some fucking moving pictures?
Yeah, well.
Go ahead. What is it? I mean, which moment?
We just, like I said earlier in the podcast, we just watched it.
Did we?
Yeah, earlier today.
So drunk.
It happened. And for the gypsy danger theme.
Geez, for a man liking this movie. This
I know,
much.
I don't know sure, why it just left me all of a sudden. The gypsy danger theme, it kind of carries pretty much the entire movie.
Yeah.
And it's so appropriate and so great. And there's the moment where you don't see Gypsy Danger for a minute, and then all of a sudden he's plowing down the, or she is plowing, whichever, is plowing down the street carrying a
ship. She's dragging a ship.
And it plays that theme, like, and each time I've seen it, I've gotten chills. Mm-hmm. Like,
and then picks it up and uses it as a fucking baseball bat.
And there's just something to be said about it, because I get chills while listening to music a lot.
Right.
But not while watching movies. I mean, it just doesn't happen a whole lot, for me anyway. But that moment, it just, every time, it's gotten me and really, really like pierced me right to my inner child or whatever it is.
Pierced your inner child yes. to death.
As it should be.
Oh, jeez.
No. But there you go.
Aubrey's here. Hey, Aubrey.
Aubrey.
Hello.
It's going to be like a regular thing.
Spencer, you got one?
Well, not... So I said this to Cameron earlier, but I think actually... And I just watched Pacific Rim about 4 hours ago for the first time, so it's pretty good.
I'm glad you liked it.
One of the things that I liked the most about it, actually, was not the music. It was like the silence. The use of silence in that film is really nice.
And just... especially during action sequences.
Yeah, there are a couple of moments where you're just like... It pulls you in.
Right on.
It's kind of... It was a really nice, like, scoring.
Yeah, the people knew what they were doing on that one.
So, musically, okay, cool. Vine, the one that Ethan was also going to say.
Hands down.
Hands down. The film, The Battery, that came out this year, is an independent horror film that came out. There's a song in which one of the characters... kind of sings along to and dances to Anthem for the Already Defeated by Rock Plaza Central, I believe, or Rock Central Plaza.
Sounds rough.
That moment is just so incredible. I mean, it just, the lyrically, it fits the rest of the movie. You can actually see the scene on YouTube, so go check it out. Just look up The Battery and the Anthem for the Already Defeated. It's just such a cool moment. And just...
If you can watch it without a stupid-ass grin on your face, then there's something really bad.
Wrong.
Really bad.
Yeah.
It's like church.
Yeah, that's what... So I posted it. I posted church. It recently, and Spencer goes, so this is church for the day. Because it's just such a, like... It's a really incredible moment.
We'll shake our rumps with
bloody stumps, and we will not be defeated. So, yeah. All right. Musical moment. Good.
Let me ask you a question. Did you bring up this category specifically for this movie?
Because of that? No. I agree with Ethan, especially for duets, mm-hmm. The duet in Stoker.
Yeah.
That moment, there's an amount of weird sexual tension in that moment.
Oh,
mm-hmm. So much.
And
it's palpable.
It's just, it's a masterful piece of music. Although I haven't seen the movie, in Spring Breakers, there's a musical moment in there that's also been pretty popular. And just looking at it by itself, it's definitely kind of a weird, eclectic kind of moment.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think as a whole, The World's End, the soundtrack, and how that intertwines with the story is pretty cool. So yeah, no, there were a few, and there always is, and it's always... I mean, as you know, you and I have talked about before, music is such a big part of a film experience for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's, you know, definitely something that I immediately cling to.
Let me interject a really odd thing that I noticed. The Wolf of Wall Street, that was one of the only weird things about it was...
Weird soundtrack.
The soundtrack was just really odd.
But it also kind of follows a Scorsese pattern, because once you get into the stuff that's happening in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
it's... filled with either covers or, you know, tunes from the 90s. So, it's a really kind of a strange thing that's going on.
Yeah.
Just
when I heard the Foo Fighters, I was like, huh?
Yeah, it was a little weird.
It was a little jarring.
Here's to You, Mrs. Robinson.
That cover, yeah.
Oh, the Lemonheads cover?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. So it was really good.
Real quick, I should mention the American Hustle, Live and Let Die.
Okay, yeah.
That was a relief. Just a really fun moment in that movie.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I feel like if this question was asked why, that would probably be a moment that came up a lot.
Yeah.
You may or may not have an answer for this one, but movie posters, were there any movie posters that caught your eye? Because I'm a big fan of poster art. I'm a big fan of retrospective poster art. You know, Mondo's always doing things. But any movies that came out this or that are going to come out where that just immediately caught your eye? Robert, you got one?
Two actually caught my eye. First of them was the Man of Steel, where it was just very simple. It was like a sky, and it was just him flying up. It was the one with the fist up.
Right.
To me, that symbolized everything of Superman, you know, being the beacon of hope and everything. It was just so simple and so beautiful. And the other one was the Wolverine Japanese brushstrokes that all those character posters had. I thought those were very well done.
I'll also say about, just real quick, touching on Man of Steel, to go along with that poster, the trailers for Man of Steel were...
Yeah, the ones that came out like 10 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they were so. I mean, but
I'm not sure I'll ever see that movie. I'm not sure I ever will.
But they were just so well done. You know,
those are well done trailers.
Because I wasn't excited about the movie, but I saw those trailers and I was like, "Holy shit!"
And it was everybody saying Superman is done by Terrence Malick.
Yeah,
oh, because the first one. Yeah,
yeah,
that
one was,
yeah. That's what I'm referring to. I mean, they're just, you know, so well done.
Mm-hmm.
Movie poster, you own?
None are. Pacific Rim. Yeah, I was about to say. The Pacific Rim one.
With the Gypsy Danger robot? Where it's just a big old Gypsy Danger head?
You're doing the Mongoloid voice, but you agree with me.
You are a Mongoloid?
It was kind of that and kind of stroke Peter. I mean,
it's halfway stroked out Peter.
I don't remember. I actually remember Pacific Rim poster.
Okay, I was gonna say because none of those caught my eye at all.
Mm-hmm.
The trailers were what did that for me. Mm-hmm. So now, nothing.
Not that I can think of.
Ethan.
I looked through them. I mean, I was really trying hard because I'm like you. I mean, a lot of times, as much as it's the same way with comic books, it's the cover that catches you and draws you and makes you say, it makes you click the link or something.
I mean, it's that first chance for the director to pull the audience.
It's like, let's see what this is about because this looks interesting.
Sure.
So aside from, like, let's say Mondo posters, that's not fair.
No.
Yeah. I chose The Conjuring, the tree with a noose hanging. I just thought overall, I mean, I think overall it was just a really... It's just really solid. It's not, you know, it doesn't have that typical crap all over the front of it. It's pretty simplistic and everything, but still at the same time, there's something about the fog and the whole appeal to it, make it an appealing poster.
Right on. Spence, you got any?
Nah.
That's okay. I've got three that I really dug. The Ken Marino movie Bad Milo. Which is about a demon living in Ken Marino's ass. It's just such a cute little puppet, like a demon. It's adorable.
No.
But there's a great poster where it's the two of them like laying on a couch together, and it's just like immediately.
I've
it's
seen,
like,
I know.
What the fuck is this? You know, like, and that was the first thing I saw. Was like, I am gonna watch this movie, and I actually really dug the movie. The teaser poster for Dawn of the Planet of the Apes with Caesar with the war paint is incredible. I mean, that is an incredible... And the whole set of them that have come out. And although I did not dig the movie as much as I expected to, the Your Next poster was pretty effective. Both of them. The one where it's the wolf mask in the shape of, like, a floor plan is really great. And then, you know, the theatrical posters.
What about the street campaign or whatever where it looked like it was...
Oh, coming through, other posters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those were also really cool. But that was essentially like the wolf poster. But so, yeah, I mean, those were really good. Movie posters I hated. And then, because, again, it's your chance at, you know, your first chance to get your audience. There's a really horribly airbrushed poster for The Heat, in which they really kind of treated Melissa McCarthy really shittily and just airbrushed her to hell, and it's kind of disgusting.
It's bad.
Because there was no reason to do it. Also because there was a commissioned poster either by Mondo or by the production company that Tom, the dude design did, and it's a hand-painted poster in like that looks like an old 80s cop movie, and it's brilliant. The thing that Marvel has been doing, and I know that it's probably intentional with like the original Iron Man 3 poster where he's just standing with his back to the camera or back to the audience and he's just kind of looking over his shoulder. That's probably intentional with the Captain America Winter Soldier teaser where he's standing in the airplane, you know, where the door is open.
Right.
However, and that might be excusable. What's not excusable is to have an Iron Man 3 poster that's Iron Man with Gwyneth Paltrow and all these floating heads behind it. Yeah. And then the Thor 2 poster is Thor with Natalie Portman.
That's what I was going to say, is that they're
all this floating heads behind.
It's like a formulaic kind of thing.
If you lay them over the top, I mean, it all lines up, and it's fucking weird.
It reminds me of like a Photoshop version of what Drew Struzan does.
Yeah.
Because you could kind of see like all these elements that are going to be in this movie, and but there's this weird Photoshop where hand-drawn art just makes it look more beautiful and epic.
Right,
and
right.
You don't really get the same effect with Photoshop.
You're talking about
Ethan's looking at it right now.
I mean, I've seen it, but I'm just
You're talking about like those old school like the Star Wars posters and stuff, where Luke has abs and everything, and like it's TIE fighters in the background.
Drew Struzan did like the '97 re-release ones where it has those heads. Okay. He did like the first two Harry Potters, I think. Mm-hmm.
He did the Indiana Jones.
All of them.
Yeah, it's cool, but there's an infinite way to arrange it and make it look unique.
And if you're going to do it the same way each time in Photoshop, if those had been hand-painted, I would not have as big of a problem with it. So that's really nitpicky and film geeky, but I don't give a shit. This is our podcast. We can do that if we want to.
Yep.
What are you going to say?
I said, for mine, I said Jobs.
Oh, the Jobs poster?
It's so bad. I mean, not that I would ever even entertain the idea of seeing that.
I was about to say, I think we've all forgotten about that movie already.
But the poster, it happened, and it looks like just like thermal reading of like an old man's face. It's just,
garbage.
It's bad.
Best soundtrack. Not like, you know, I mean, like we're talking score or, you know, compilation soundtrack.
Just skip me.
But you're right. I mean, it is a great score.
Mm-hmm.
Pacific Rim, right? Yeah, great score.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as far as standout stuff, and I also keep... Spencer, really, I do keep thinking about Devil Cock.
Oh.
And I know it's not even... You know, it's not like you guys can listen to the podcast, then go
watch
the movie.
But they can go get the soundtrack.
The music is available, so...
I mean, you don't even have to, you know, have seen the movie to appreciate the amount of work that went into the soundtrack. You can go to our, you know, just search Devil Cock on Bandcamp. You don't even have to buy it. You know, all the money's going to Ryan and Spencer, so if you want to buy it, you can. But you can listen to it and just hear, you know, the amount of work that went into it.
Yeah, and I think it is worth mentioning that the whole Quiet Italian segment blew me away. So,
at the end, the theater one, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah, that's cool.
I don't really go back and watch the movie, but I've watched that segment.
Yeah.
Because it just gets like I made the fucking movie. So my heart races every time I get to that point because it's just the fucking strings just starting out. It's brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant stuff. Soundtrack, though.
Now the next person up is going to sound like a real asshole.
Ethan, what'd you think?
mine was hands down. And I'll admit that part of the appeal and the way that this stood out to me was because we'd had a few drinks. I think we were drinking some Kraken root beer floats and over at Hewitt's house.
Oh, we have the same answer then.
But, yeah. But the... So I was kind of feeling it, you know, which makes music more, like, enjoyable and you get more, like, philosophical about it shit. Yeah.
You don't even have to explain the genius that is this
song. Oh, yeah. You know? But the Maniac remake soundtrack, Lord, it's just like...
Spencer, like, the remake.
It's so good. And it's from, like, the start. It's like, as soon as the movie starts, you're just like, holy shit. And it just consistently...
You don't have to know anything about... Spencer can attest to this. You don't have to know anything about that movie. It's just... It's synthy. It's got... Hmm. You know, it's dripping with that, you know, electronic...
I love 80s synth.
It's beautiful.
Neon Heart?
It's got a bit of a Neon Heart, yeah.
Produced by the live synth guy for Phoenix.
Yeah, Rob?
Yeah, yep. And it's, like, stupid good.
Yeah, it's ridiculously...
Makes the movie in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I keep moving the mic, but... Like, if you talk dead on, you're good, and you're talking dead up from the side, so they're both good. But okay. If it's this way, we can't hear you. Okay. Well, we're good now. Yeah. That's a good one. That would have been... I mean, that is my pick, too. Robert, you got me?
There's number one, but I've been saying it too much, so I'm just going to go to...
Man of Steel?
Yeah, absolutely. But Hans Zimmer did another score, very underappreciated score this year. Rush.
Yeah.
Which was... an amazing score, especially towards the end. You're just through a whirlwind of emotions. It's because of that score, what's going on the screen, and seeing the races and that score just, you know, blare at you. It's just really incredible. And I think the other one will have to be M83's Blip for Oblivion.
Right.
That score made that movie. Mm-hmm. It was really well done. It's kind of like Daft Punk when they did Tron Legacy.
Okay, yeah.
And I think this director, I think it's the same director, he's going to be known for his, you know, his out of the box sort of choices for doing scores.
I also like to throw in, I watched Mud at the beginning of this year, yesterday. The score is reminiscent of The Road and kind of Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Oh.
And it's got that southern kind of thing that I'm a big fan of scores like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one that I really, really enjoyed too. So moving on, you got any more?
I was going to say earlier when we were talking about M83 was that during one of the movies that surprised me, which it's, I can say this because it's not going to be on the surprise movie segment.
Right.
One of the movies that surprised me was The Necessary Death of Charlie Countryman.
I think it's the
full title of it. And at the end of it, at the climax of it, there's a song going, and it really fits. And I'm sitting there watching it going, what is this? Where have I heard this? And if I'm not mistaken, it's M83. And it just works perfectly. It's just the perfect song, and it's just awesome.
Right on. Good deal. All right, we're getting, you know, closer to our top picks. Cameron.
Yes.
I don't know, and I'm not picking at you. I mean, because you may or may not be able to. Did you see anything this year that surprised you by how much you liked it, or you didn't think you were gonna like it and really dug it?
I think both the movies that I really ended up like losing my shit over in a good way, I kind of expected to, or at least thought I was gonna like them.
Okay, would you say maybe this is a good time to talk about Smog though? I mean.
Yeah,
you know, you weren't.
I was trying to go in without expectation,
right?
Because that's just my current way to approach, or way to try to approach things.
Sure,
I had heard it was an improvement, and it was, and I think this is a good time as any to mention the 48 frames per second thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't ever get used to it for the first movie,
right?
I thought it looked bad from the beginning, and by the end of it, I was still didn't like it. This one, I didn't like it the first 5 minutes in, and then after that, I was like, I get why they're doing this, because with all the 3D swooping around, you know, three-dimensional kind of big camera movements,
right?
It makes sense, because with the lower frame rate, because I saw the first time I saw it, it was the lower frame rate. It's kind of jittery and not smooth, and you know, as someone who always sets my camera to 24 frames per second, I still appreciated, you know, somebody going for it and going for something that a lot of people, at least in the beginning, were definitely going to hate and
right.
definitely going to not like it.
Right.
But I think it really, at the end of the day, enhanced at least the second movie in the trilogy.
Sure.
So.
Okay. I just want to say this thing about The Hobbit, Desolation of Smog. The barrel sequence, to me, is the modern day equivalent of the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom sequence. We're on the modern day equivalent of the minecart sequence.
Wow.
It was just so much fun.
Wow. Yes.
That was the best sequence of that.
I agree. That was a great, great moment. And that's where we had talked about there were a few raid comparisons.
Yeah.
Totally out of place for a lot of it. It doesn't make any sense. But for that little bit of it. Mm-hmm. It was just so full tilt, no let up for a good, you know, 5 minutes or so. And I totally got it in that moment, at least. So it was, my opinion's not really different than most people's in that it was an improvement, still wasn't great.
Okay. Robert, what surprised you? Anything this year?
One movie is The Wolverine.
Okay.
I loved The Wolverine. I hated X-Men Origins Wolverine. I thought that movie is such a disservice to the character, and most importantly, to Deadpool.
I was about to say Deadpool. Deadpool
was screwed in that movie. And just overall, it was just a poorly written movie, and a lot of this movie where too many cooks were in the kitchen.
Sure.
And Wolverine just simplified things down. It's not as epic or grand as, you know, Iron Man, Man of Steel, or just or Avengers. It's a pretty simple story in Japan. It's a personal journey, and to me, it's up there with the best of the X-Men movies. Maybe in my top three, because there've been like seven of them now. But yeah, it's quite good, and probably.
Well, here's my question about it.
Sure.
How are the biceps?
The biceps are amazing. Like in 3D, I wanted to touch them. So, yeah. The other one is probably going to be Oz the Great and Powerful.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. I had no expectations. The only reason I was kind of semi-interested is because Sam Raimi was directing it.
Yeah.
And when I saw it, I'm like, wow, this is incredible. Right. Love this, because the trailer's made out to be like this lame Alice in Wonderland looking weird thing.
Sure.
And it really wasn't that. I mean, sure, it's a lot of visual CGI, you know, environments and to broaden the scope, but it really is a great journey about this character realizing, yeah, wait, I am kind of a scumbag. I gotta change my tune.
Right.
So, to save these people and be the to be the hope that these this world needs, and I really like stories about where a man has to break themselves down and build themselves back up.
Yeah. Spence, did you see anything that you didn't think you'd like that you did?
Well, so I've been sitting here thinking. I don't know why I thought this,
okay,
or even if I really had a really coherent sort of worked out thought about it necessarily, but I just didn't. So it took me a really long time to finally go and see the next Hunger Games movie.
Okay.
Fire.
Mm.
And I don't know. I don't think I ever maybe had the real, again, thought out conscious, you know, like, is this going to be bad necessarily? But I really love that movie. Like,
yeah.
It was so good. Like, I mean, in a lot of ways, that makes me feel like maybe it was foolish of me to not just go see the thing. But
right.
Yeah, it was very, very good.
Wow. Okay.
Really enjoyed it, and sort of really excited about them finishing this thing up. Although people tell me, you know, book readers tell me, which I haven't read the books, people tell me the third, it's a little bit of a weird.
Yeah, I didn't like the
ending.
I really hated the third book.
Well,
with every fiber of my being.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, the second movie was good.
Okay. Cool. Did you? What about you? I think we might have a similar one. I don't know.
Maybe.
maybe.
I have
fuck
a,
you too, buddy.
I have a 1A and a 1B and maybe a 1C after today. World War Z.
Yeah, that's,
mm-hmm.
That's my
yeah, I forgot about that.
I went into it with just fairly low expectations. It was just one of those where I read the book and I was like, that didn't matter. Like, the people that were like book purists were like, that doesn't matter. You can't make that book into a movie. It's just a bunch of journals from people all over the world. So that was stupid if anybody was upset about that.
Yeah.
But like, I went into it with really low expectations, and it was just, you know, it didn't blow me away, but it was like, this is worth the $5 matinee price that I paid to see it. I mean, it was fun. It was entertaining. Brad Pitt was pretty good in it.
Mm-hmm.
The zombies, upon seeing the trailer, you know, the commercial, I was like, this looks stupid, but they actually worked pretty well.
Yeah, they worked in their own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In their own set of rules.
Yeah.
And then the other one right up there with that was Warm Bodies.
Okay.
I pulled a complete 180 on that one. Upon seeing the trailer, I can actually remember turning to Heather and saying, you could not pay me to see this movie. There's no way you can get me in theaters to see it. And then it came out, and, you know, about a week it bounced around, and I just heard such positive word of mouth about it. I was like, well, you know, let's try it out. And me and Heather and my mom went to see it. And I mean, it was fun. We loved it. It was... it was entertaining. It was a nice take on a, you know, the Romeo and Juliet love mm-hmm. story.
It surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, it was fun. It was funny. And the shadow monsters or whatever you want to call them, I thought that was really cool. And, you know, it worked. And lastly, the 1C was American Hustle today that we watched. And it wasn't really, it wasn't a surprise to me. It was just kind of, I was surprised. I had only heard negative things about it from, like, people in my immediate circle. It was just, I had only heard people that didn't like it or whatever. But, I mean, I enjoyed the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was no way, you know, it wasn't, well, probably not in my top 10 movies of the year. But, I mean, it kept my interest, and I thought it had really good performances in it.
Right. Yeah. I'd probably say it mine, because I don't want to retread, even though I do agree with World War Z. Mine was probably The Heat with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy.
I want to see it. I still have it.
I didn't think I was going to like that movie. I was double over with laughter. I mean, that was such a funny fucking movie. Yeah, just from start to finish, I love that one. Not really much more that needs to be said, because we are running out of time, at least on our recording. What?
I'm going to go take a piss.
Okay. Well, go ahead. I mean, I can stall. That was mine. We're going to kind of skip disappointments, because I feel like that's going to kind of tie in with worst film anyway.
Well, my disappointments and worst were two different things, but I won't mention them here. But
right.
When I first heard that, I was like, "This, I know this one's going to be a trap for me for several different reasons."
Oh, I kind of want to know what it is.
He was disappointed by Pacific Rim, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's what it is.
It was a Pacific Rim, but yeah. I'm just going to let people enjoy it.
I feel like, here's the thing. I'll say this.
Okay.
I feel like at some point, because we've done one of them, I feel like at some point we might need to have a debate show about Pacific Rim.
Okay.
And just talk about it.
And Dark Knight Rises.
Maybe we can do those two. Have you on and do both of those.
Sure.
That would be a lot of fun.
That'd be fun, yeah.
Okay, cool. So we were just talking about one of Robert's, because we're kind of skipping over disappointments. One of Robert's disappointments was Pacific Rim, and we said we're going to come back and do we're going to do a debate show at some point. So just kind of let's rattle them off. Well, like maybe three in this category, because I want to spend a little time talking about our best films, worst films. You have any that you just hated this year, Cam? I feel like you don't really, do you?
No, I didn't see anything that I just didn't. That straight up didn't.
Fucking turd.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm having, off the top of my head anyway, I'm having trouble thinking of anything that I walked out of the theater angry.
Okay.
You know?
Are you in home viewing? Nothing?
Not that's coming to mind.
All right. Spencer, do you hate anything this year?
You know, you'd think I would have.
I think you might.
You think I would have. No, I'm kind of with Cameron. I, you know, honestly, I didn't see a lot of movies this year. The things I did see, I was pretty sure I was going to like, so maybe that doesn't count.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's it. I've gotten out of a habit of waiting like a week or so.
Right.
You know what, though? This is not of the year, but so on a plane this year,
yeah.
I finally watched 500 Days of Summer. Get over it.
I agree wholeheartedly.
I can't even talk about it.
He's still that upset about it.
He's still on day 450.
I cried for like 3 hours after I watched that. I was so depressed.
Oh no, it's a terrible movie though.
It's awful.
But then he falls in love with Autumn.
Then
after that, I guess.
It? It's one big joke leading up to that. Real quick, biggest surprises. Don John. I did not think I was going to like that at all.
That was a good movie.
I fucking dug the shit out of it. And that's another one I can't stop thinking about, because it just, for something that he wrote, you know, directed and starred in.
The kid's on fire, I tell you.
It didn't feel self-indulgent, which I really dug. And great performances. All right, I'm sorry. Robert. Worst? Top three worst films.
Whew. Wow. I have a top 10 right here, but man. God. I want to go ahead and do top four, because there's one I want to mention.
Okay.
But number four is The Lone Ranger. That movie sucks so bad. And I don't know where this new cult following is coming from that's defending this movie, but you're wrong. That is a terrible goddamn movie. It is a waste of money. $215 million for Western. Shut up.
Robert, why don't you tell us how you really feel?
Okay.
How I really feel?
It wasn't that bad. No. It was awful.
Wow.
If you want to see 2 hours of the hero getting his ass kicked, and for some reason he turns into his badass, and the last 10 minutes of that movie were its quote unquote redeeming qualities, but let's just say it's too little, too late.
I guess I'm just most confused as to why you saw that movie.
Because it seemed like beforehand everybody was picking on it.
That's what I thought.
I was kind of like, you know what, this movie might surprise us. I was kind of hoping this movie would be like the little engine that could. You know, everybody's picking on it. Nobody's giving it any hope. So I'm like, you know what, let's see. Let's find out. Nope. It is awful. Next one is Identity Thief. I hate that movie. I hate Melissa McCartney in it. She is an irredeemable character.
Yes. That's one I forgot about.
Yeah.
Go ahead, and then I'll add in.
Well, Melissa McCartney is an irredeemable character, and the fact they tried to force or some sort of redemption at the end is retarded, because there is nothing redeemable about her. She's a horrible human being, ugly inside and out, and she got what she was coming to towards the end.
Yes. It was... It should have been great. And it totally wasn't.
The trailer was funny. I'll admit that. The trailer was, I thought, was pretty good.
So that was one I totally forgot about.
The next is The Counselor.
Oh, God.
If you just want to watch a movie about a bunch of existential mumbo jumbo, go for it. There is no real dialogue in this movie. It's just about, you know, life is hard, you know, just the consequences of everything we do is
okay. How many celebrities can we squeeze into
it? Yeah. And the number one, I was debating on this, but I think it's Only God Forgives. It is a monumental disappointment. It is a awful film. It doesn't work on any surface level or subtext level. It is bad.
It's bad.
Bad movie making.
Ethan, top three or top worst?
I have five.
Oh my god!
I'll do. It keeps growing, doesn't it?
I can count. I can mark mine off. I can't.
Well, it'll be quick because one of them he already said. Only God Forgives. It's a horrible abortion of a movie.
So is that at your number five spot?
No, that's actually my number. I didn't rank these.
Oh, okay.
It was too hard to do that. The Purge.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I won't say that, but yeah, it was bad. It was really bad.
Yeah.
We're the Millers was just a colossal waste of time. That's 2 hours of my life I can never get back. I could die now, and I could be 2 hours short of curing cancer, and it will be because I saw We're the Millers. Out of the Furnace.
That's two strikes. Oh no! Never mind. Forget what I said.
Really?
Out of the Furnace was I was like, oh, this will be good. Christian Bale, Casey Affleck, Woody Harrelson, and then I went to see it in the theaters, and I was like, oh, because it's no point. I told Mike, it was like if you go see a movie about someone making a sandwich, and then at the end of it you walk out and you're like, okay, well they made a sandwich. And Oz the Great and Powerful.
Whoa! Wow, flip side. Okay.
To my heart.
It just, as I was in the theater, I was wanting someone to come in and just cut my throat so I didn't have to finish the movie.
Wow.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to skip one of them. But I will say Only God Forgives, The Purge. I'm going to go with R.I.P.D. R.I.P.D.
Mm-hmm.
Ripped.
I watched it after it came out. I didn't pay any money for it. Still wanted my time back. It was really, really bad. It was a shitty CGI, Men in Black ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I mean, it was just awful. Awful, awful. Everybody feels like they're slumming it. It's really bad. All right. We've come to our coup de grace.
Creme de la creme.
What of things? Well, I think we should also say that you and I were kind of disappointed. Didn't like Man of Steel.
We got 20 minutes. There's not enough time to talk about Man of Steel.
All right.
Okay.
I agree, but maybe for another show.
Okay. So we're going to argue. Robert's going to come on, and we're going to debate Man of Steel, Dark Knight Rises, and Pacific Rim.
I think it's possible to do all three in one show.
Okay.
We got to keep it short and sweet, but we can do it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start.
Best of the year.
Robert, I'll kick this off.
All right.
Top 10.
Let's do 5.
Oh, okay. Number 5 is Justice League: The Flashpoint Paradox.
It was
a direct-to-video movie. Wonderful, wonderful adaptation of the book. Great animation and a whole lot of fun. Really dug it. Number 4 is Gravity.
Yep.
That is a fun ride. It really is a ride. It's like Jurassic Park or Star Wars that you see in theaters.
Because you feel, I mean, you move with the, you know, mm-hmm. like, I mean, every, mm-hmm. yeah, I totally agree with that.
Number 3, one that will probably be overlooked this year, Side Effects.
Side Effects was really good.
That was an excellent movie. There was like a twist a minute when the halfway mark hit. Mm-hmm. It was like everything was just like...
But not in a dumb, like, cheap way.
No.
Like in a really... Like in a thriller, suspenseful kind of way.
It earns the word Hitchcockian, you know, mm-hmm. when it comes okay. to that. Number 2, The Hunger Games: Catching Fire.
Right.
I love that movie. That is a great movie, and the Hunger Games franchise might be my new big franchise after Batman, Star Wars, and Indiana Jones.
Wow.
I love this franchise. And number 1, Rush. Right, with Chris Hemsworth. And Daniel Brühl, who play Niki Lauda and James Hunt, the Formula race car drivers.
Right. Wow.
It's great movie.
Ron Howard directed that, right?
Yeah. And, you know, he's usually hit or miss.
Yeah.
Man, did he hit it out of the park this time. It's just a great movie.
I can't wait to see this one.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Wow. Good list. Those are great picks.
Thank you.
Spencer, you got any?
Yeah, why not? I got 3.
Okay.
And only one of them's a repeat. So, definitely Catching Fire.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is.
Right.
Very good. So, I think my second favorite this year was probably this movie, this documentary that I saw called Media Stan. Did you hear about this?
Oh, yeah.
Written by Julian Assange.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically it's about these guys who, basically, they take cameras with them as they go through several Central Asian countries, several Stan countries,
right.
and try to sell leaked cables to local like media outlets.
Oh,
there.
Wow.
And it's sort of them like dealing with local authorities and like what you can and can't publish.
Sure.
And it's all true.
Right.
It's really, really good.
Wow.
Really interesting little... I watched it on Vimeo a few months ago. It was really good. And I think that came out this year. Yeah. So that's my number 2. Number 1, and I don't think we've mentioned this at all, and we haven't talked about this. My favorite movie of this whole year, Fruitvale Station.
Fruitvale Station was a big deal. I haven't seen it, but I liked it.
No, I have a copy. I just haven't watched it yet. I'm dying to see it.
I wanted to see it, but it was gone a week after it came to theaters.
Right. Another true story about the murder of Oscar Grant by the police.
Yeah.
And man. Great acting. I mean, all unknowns mostly, I guess. But like, you know, I don't think they could have told that story any better.
That was a Sundance darling, and I think it played big at Cannes. And
really beautiful. Like the way that they sort of treated, not just sort of where he was in life and like the situation, but even I mean, the moments leading up to the what ended up being his death. It was just really celebratory and kind of wonderful. So great movie. Check it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I'm dying to see that one. That one's definitely been on my list. Ethan.
I had the Evil Dead at number 5. Ooh. Because I saw it twice in theaters and
theatrically.
Both times.
Brilliant, brilliant movie.
Pacific Rim, once again.
At number 4?
Yeah.
Okay.
The World's End was number 3.
Right.
Because that was just the fitting end of the trilogy and just all around awesome. Number 2, The Wolf of Wall Street. Like I said, when we came out of the theater, I told Mike I didn't know if it would be in my top 10. And then after 3 days of it just leaving
sticking
my
in
brain.
Your brain.
It wouldn't let me sleep at night because I'm replaying the scenes. Yeah,
there you are.
Oh yeah. And then number 1 was probably Gravity.
Wow, really? That took your top spot?
Yeah. I watched it on the laptop, pair of headphones in. You know, I didn't get to see it, didn't catch the theatrical run, and I was just blown away by it. I mean, it's just such a solid, every aspect of it.
That speaks to the quality. I'll explain why later, but
well, yeah, I think I know why you're about to say it too.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that my two favorites this year, and I didn't see a whole lot of stuff,
right?
But they were, as we know, Pacific Rim,
right,
and Gravity.
Yeah.
And to what those two movies have in common is that these are the first movies I've ever seen in 3D that I was like, I get 3D now.
Sure.
Like everything I've ever, all the other stuff, even The Hobbit, seemed like, okay, there's a flat image that's close to me, and there's another flat image that's further away.
Yeah.
But Pacific Rim, and to a greater extent Gravity, it actually felt three-dimensional. Yep. Like, if it was Sandra Bullock's face, it felt like it had depth to it.
Right.
And I don't know if they just shot it different or if they produced it different, whatever it was, but it just wasn't the same.
Well, and it's kind of like what Robert was saying, it felt like a fucking ride.
Yeah,
I mean, I was dodging things. As they were coming off the screen. I mean, I just sitting there, you know. And there's moments where you're reaching for, you know, you want the character to grab something, or you know, you want them to get away from something. And I felt myself just, you know, it was a visceral, very visceral experience.
Now, you said you saw it on a laptop.
Yeah,
that's what I wanted to say. Is I was like, I do not know how this movie is going to play on a smaller screen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He just proved it to me that his first experience was on a laptop, and he was still blown away by it, that this movie is going to have life outside the theater.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it again.
And again, that was your concern with Pacific Rim.
Yeah. Yeah, and then seeing it today, I mean, just how big all the action set pieces played, you know. Really, really great.
I have hope that one day both of these movies are going to get another run.
Right.
And I'll go back in a second, even if it were tomorrow.
Yeah, there we go. Ashley just walked in from seeing Wolf of Wall Street. Best movie of the year?
I'd say so.
Wow.
Where's Leo's Oscar?
Right? This is the one. Jesus. Hey, that's a whole other thing.
Retroactive Oscar.
Yeah, that'll be our Oscar special podcast.
Yeah.
My top five.
All right.
I'm going to go number five. Was kind of tied for a little while, but eventually I just went Maniac. Man, Elijah Wood really surprised the shit out of me.
That was my number six. So it's
him, yeah. Mm-hmm. Him, well, that and Stoker were my two that were tied. His performance, the effects, and the score absolutely made that film, I mean, one of the most memorable things I saw this year.
Right.
How much we got over there?
13 minutes.
Okay, I can do this.
Yeah. I thought it said 1 minute 30 seconds. I was like, Micro Machine Man talk.
Yeah, yeah, right. Coming in at my number four, I'm going to go with Pacific Rim. You know, and mainly, obviously, I'm a big Del Toro fanboy, but action, I mean, just the action of that film really is what sold it. And just the creature design and everything, and just the mythology, you know.
Yeah, and we had discussed how earlier today when we were watching it, it's like there's so much movie cliches and like dumb stereotypes,
melodrama,
and like bad acting and all that kind of stuff.
But that's the film it's supposed to be.
It feels intentional.
We will talk about this, Robert. Yeah. I promise we'll talk about that.
Yeah, it's like what makes it such a magical thing is if you had serious, if you had something
Robert
else,
eating his own face right now.
If you had something else, it would be like, what is this doing in this movie? Like, it just felt perfect in its
absurdity.
Yeah, exactly. And I find it hard to believe that actors that good would intentionally be bad, or would unintentionally be bad. It's a whole
I'll
different
have my
discussion.
Say something.
My number three, let's just go. My number three, Wolf of Wall Street. Probably would have been higher, but I'm kind of, my top three were really hard just because of how I experienced them in the theater. And that one, I mean, has stuck with me. But my other two, really, just the experience I had in the theater was kind of just edged that one out a little bit. My number two is Evil Dead. Talk about visceral movie-going experience.
Yeah.
Closest I've ever been to just losing it in a theater. I mean, the scene in the bathroom, I nearly threw up. I've never had to look away from a screen in a movie theater to keep myself from being physically ill. And the fact that somebody passed out during the screening, I mean, it's just, it, you know, 100% practical effects. Whether you augmented those digitally is another story, but those effects were all practical. That is, I mean, that's a gore hound and a horror fan's, like, wet dream. I mean, that, you know, that is a perfect marriage of, you know, I thought the story was great. It had a little, some dodgy acting. Whether that was intentional or not is kind of, you know, remains to be seen. I think, you know, maybe Fede Alvarez might have had a little bit of a hard time translating, because it felt like the dialogue that's kind of delivered in old Italian horror films with American actors, where they're getting that kind of direction, and it might not translate very well. But if you're visually alone, that movie just fucking knocked my socks off. Number one, The World's End. I think that Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, and Nick Frost not only created three really beautiful movies, but this is kind of a perfect way to leave that series. And just the, you know, they've grown as human beings, and they've grown, he's grown as a filmmaker, and I've spent so much time with the Blu-ray over the last 2 weeks. There's three commentaries and like over 3 hours of special features. And it's just all, I mean, it's a film school, you know. I will never go to film school, so I learn from the people that inspire me and the people that influence me the most. And Edgar Wright's definitely up there. So if you haven't checked out, you know, the film is great, but anybody who's a film fan needs to see some of the stuff that's on that Blu-ray. So those are my top five films of the year. I was a good year for film. Man, it was a good year for art.
How much time's left?
Almost. 7 minutes.
Yep. Can you run through the best performances?
Oh, yeah, we can do best performance. I think my favorite performance this year was Simon Pegg in The World's End. I mean, just the fact that he played so against type.
Mine is Leonardo DiCaprio. Give him the Oscar, please. And,
can you get closer to the mic?
Yeah.
I just want to win the
Oscar. And then Jeremy Gardner in The Battery.
Yeah. I will agree. Man, I don't know. Now that you mentioned Leo, like, I don't know why I didn't think about that. That one's hard for top spot, for sure.
I want Leo to win, so Tumblr will have a meltdown.
Tumblr shuts down on that day. They will
finally shut up. But I think... Chiwetel Ejiofor for 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah,
I think might get it, and I think if he loses, I know some people who will flip out.
Yep.
So, but
God bless him for sticking with that name.
Yeah, that's ballsy. That is true. But
God bless him for sticking with these God given.
I'm just saying, a lot of people don't.
Yeah,
John Wayne is not John Wayne. Marilyn Monroe is not Marilyn Monroe. That's true.
Yeah. One of y'all best performance?
I'm gonna have to say Leo DiCaprio, just because he just went bug nuts crazy in that movie.
It is incredible.
It is a wacky film, man.
Idris Elba, no. He was good, but
he's such a shit.
I really do think, although I didn't I don't think that American Hustle was a great movie, it had some great performances in it. And it's like, take anyone from that movie. I think Amy Adams probably at the top, followed closely by
Louis C.K.
Yeah, Louis C.K. All the performances in that movie were just great.
Oh, that's
really
awesome.
Wait, I thought there was a joke. Louis C.K.'s in this movie?
Yeah. Awesome. And he's good. He plays his role perfectly. Well,
now I definitely
shut me up.
Haters gonna hate.
You got one?
Matthew McConaughey and everything he's been doing lately.
Holy shit. All right, Matthew McConaughey and the Wolf of Wall Street.
We can't talk about that movie.
We can't talk about
with Jared Leto and all that. Has anybody seen that?
Yeah. The total body transformation he has in Dallas Buyers Club.
That's supposed to be more Oscar bait.
He was great in Mud. His one role, I mean, he's a very small role in Wolf of Wall Street. It's worth the price of admission.
Pivotal role, though.
Do it! So brilliant. Yes, Matthew McConaughey in everything. I also want to give a shout out to Chad Leahy and I know our dad. Yes. That motherfucker brought it. Brought it big time. Chad, you're my winner. You're my golden goose.
Lay them eggs.
That's it. This has been the biggies.
We made it.
Our year-end roundtable.
This is another one where at the end of it we're like, we made it.
That was a marathon. That was a marathon of podcasting. So I guess that's it. We will see you all next week. Yeah, we'll be back.
Yeah.
We're not taking more time.
I don't know what we're doing, but...
No, we'll neither do we. Neither do I, rather. So for... we're going to need a bigger show.
Kirby Charles.
Ethan Hudson.
Spencer.
Robert.
And I have been Mike D. Have been, will be, forever. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you all next week.